Welcome to LA Podcast. I'm Hayes.
I'm Scott.
Episode 2.
Yep.
This is the big one.
Yeah.
If you do two episodes, you do 200.
Oh, wow. Is that
Yep. That's true. Pretty common knowledge. And so this is what... It's locked in that we will do 200 because we're doing two.
Sophomore slump, does that apply to...
This episode.
Yeah. Okay.
The sophomore slump applies... It's not going to be good.
Yeah, set your expectations low.
We have so much stuff to cover, so let's just start. We'll do like some quick hits on some stories that are from the past week, and then we also have some original reporting for the first time,
right?
Maybe last
for the first and last time.
Yes,
about the Boring Company.
About the Boring Company, the tunnels that Elon Musk is building under Los Angeles to run future subways and highways to transport people and cars and solve traffic in Los Angeles. This is a plan. Up to this point, the plans have been a little discreet. Most people don't know what the plan is for these tunnels.
And now,
right?
And now
is that
we
fair
are,
to say?
That is fair to say. And we have all the clarity on that.
Yes. Just us. Only we have this. But we want to follow up on some of the stuff we talked about last week. We talked about the special elections. Nobody voted in any of these elections.
Yeah, some of these front runners had... So you have, again, like we mentioned last time, you have sub 10% voter turnout, which is kind of just, I guess, the expectation at this point for these district elections. But some of these...
Any election,
front runners,
basically, in LA.
...have 8,000, 9,000 votes.
Yeah. We could have swung the leaderboard... with the number of listeners that we had for our first episode, and I'm going to say that we did.
Yeah, who can check that claim?
I think it's almost certain that we did swing change the results of the election.
We churned out just a remarkable number of special election voters.
Yes. We also mentioned at the end of the last episode, we talked about a different sex scandal in the assembly that has not come to a special election yet because the person who allegedly committed these is still in office. It like has not been thrown out of office yet.
No.
That's Christina Garcia. It was like Bell Gardens area, like Southeast LA. She represents. She's been accused of squeezing butts and crotches, I think.
Yes, both.
Is it the same
individual,
person's butt and crotch?
And yeah. Also, I think there were some other assorted harassment claims that he made about her.
Okay.
In the office place, yeah.
In the office place.
And then there was also the spin the bottle game.
She encouraged her staffers to play spin the bottle with her?
I think it was, they were at a hotel, and mm-hmm. it was like, you guys should play spin the bottle. I'm going to leave the room now, but really...
Okay.
Here's a bottle or something along
so
those
that
lines.
I do need to know more details about that to know how I feel about it. If it's like, oh, you guys going to play spin the bottle? Ha ha. Or was it like, serious? I have all the equipment to do this.
Seriously,
I got
here
a bottle
is a
that
bottle.
Really spins nicely.
Or like, you guys look like you would enjoy a game of spin the bottle. We could probably spend all day recreating the mechanics of how this happened.
Yeah, and what's okay and what is it in terms of encouraging your staffers to play spin the bottle.
I would say to be safe, you just don't do it. But.
So Christina Garcia went on KQED, the California Report podcast, to talk about some of these scandals, sort of put them to bed. She did not manage to do that.
If anything, she made it worse.
You could argue that she made it worse. She was asked about a few different things. One was that she had a keg in her office, and I think a wine fridge in her other office, and just kind of the culture of alcoholism.
Yeah.
Or alcohol.
She was accused personally of being an alcoholic, and her sort of deflection was that, I'm not an alcoholic. There's a culture of drinking in Sacramento. Which I participate in.
Yes. And we should mention that Christina Garcia was one of the two lawmakers kind of charged with cleaning up Sacramento after all the Me Too stuff.
Right.
After some other assembly members were accused of sexual harassment and rape and all these other things, she and Laura Friedman were leading the charge to clean it up.
Right. And saying Sacramento's culture has got to change. Assemblymember Friedman has frequently called it a boys club, etc.
Yeah.
So there's this notion of the culture has to change, but then you have one of the architects of that push for change now being accused of essentially just being kind of a bully who drinks a lot.
Kind of a horny bully. Yeah.
Who wants to see her staffers make out.
Yeah.
And those are like the list of things that she's being accused of. And then
yeah. And a bigot.
And she has, just kind of a lot of bullying behaviors that she then does really not a good job of clearing herself.
Yeah.
Of.
She flips pretty fast from the culture in Sacramento needs to change to... This is everyone does this. This is the culture of Sacramento. This is just what it is.
This is what it is. Do I have a keg in my office? Yes, but who doesn't? Yes. Sort of thing.
And I totally believe that, by the way.
So same here. But then, you know, it's kind of weird just to know that it's like, it's that quick, like you said, from being like, let's change it all to, well, maybe this is just how business has to happen here.
This was kind of a theme in the whole interview. She was asked if there have been accusations that she referred to former Assembly Speaker John Perez as a homo and the worst homophobic slur. But so she was asked if she said these things. This was her first response.
There's no one in politics that doesn't talk about some of the peers we work with, and we use candid language. And so along the way, I've used candid language. I curse. I mean, I've been vocal about some of my favorite words, and I don't know if I can see them on the radio.
So,
did she say she doesn't know if you can say them on the radio?
She doesn't. She's not sure if you're allowed to say shit or fuck on on public radio.
But just to be safe, she does it.
But yeah, if you can use this, great. If you can't, that's totally fine too. Shit, fuck.
Just, I'm not sure. These are some of my favorite words. I don't know if you've heard them before.
Yeah. And yeah, but again, like everyone in Sacramento talks like this about other people. He pressed a little more on the use of the word.
Did you ever use that to describe the speaker, the word homo?
I can't remember, but I wouldn't be surprised if I used that word. Right. So I think that that's fair. I think terms like faggot are period derogatory. There's no good way to use that word. I think a term like homo can also be derogatory. Right. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm an angel. Was I using those in derogatory terms? No. You know, it's almost like I would say I'm a brown person sometimes.
It's just an unbelievable amount going on.
There's so much going on in there. There's this progression from I don't remember doing it, but I probably did, to there's no non-derogatory way to use those words, I use those words in a non-derogatory way.
Yes, when I remember using them.
Now I remember.
Very nicely.
Right.
If I were accused of using these homophobic slurs, I probably would try to avoid saying them in the interview where I talk about how I never say them.
Right, and just sounding just so comfortable.
So comfortable. They just fall straight out of her mouth. The brown person thing,
I would say
is debatable.
Which part of that is?
Whether... calling someone a homo, calling a gay person a homo is equivalent to calling
yourself
a brown person. I'm not either of these. It's not for me to say.
As a as a brown person, I don't know. This is really weird to me because it's pretty evident that there's no situation in which something that you feel comfortable, you know what you feel comfortable referring to yourself as. You don't know what other people feel comfortable being referred to as. And there's, considering she apparently knows that it's not a respectful term, I don't know how she would think that John Perez would want to be called that.
And they, KQED asked John Perez if he agreed with that statement, because he is gay. That those are the same. He disagreed. He does not think that calling someone a homo and a brown person are the same thing. Yes. There was a little postscript to the KQED interview that was kind of interesting.
On that last point about the homophobic slur, Garcia's camp objects to us using that portion of the interview. They say that the Assemblywoman's comments will be taken grossly out of context by the general public, and they lambasted KQED and myself personally for asking the question, saying it's classic, quote, gotcha journalism.
How dare they
Don't ask.
In the interview where she is confronting these many scandals, how dare they ask her if she did them.
Right.
And
also, we were not expecting that question.
Okay, so we're done talking about state politics, I think, forever now. I'm totally, after last episode, this one, no more state stuff.
More.
All city things. We wanted to talk about the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, we get to do foreign politics.
Yes.
Foreign policy, that's right. and everything that it has to do with our main industry. Well, our famous industry, right. Hollywood.
He visited LA this week for the first time. So picture like that montage in all like 90s movies when like in like Beverly Hills Ninja, like going down Beverly Drive in,
right.
You know, under the palm trees there. And like walking down Rodeo and putting his hands in the prints outside the Chinese theater.
Axel F is playing.
Yes.
And yeah, of course.
He rented every room in the Four Seasons Beverly Hills. He was in town because I understand they are allowing movies to be shown in Saudi Arabia for the first time.
Right. And this is kind of like part of a broader charm offensive that
yes.
the kingdom is doing, and as you said, this is their new crown prince. He was named the crown prince sometime last year and now is going out to see everybody in the world and say, I'm the new face of Saudi Arabia. And that has been remarkably well received,
incredibly successful on all fronts in the mainstream media. People, like, everyone talks about him as this great progressive who's like advancing women's rights in Saudi Arabia and all these different things. Not a lot of mention in LA media about the fact that he turned the Ritz in Riyadh into a prison and torture facility through which he could extort billions of dollars from his generals and other, basically a coup.
Right. Yeah. It was essentially holding, I believe, like you said, generals, members of his own family, things like that, under house arrest for months. Months and months.
Yes, and tortured someone to death in that facility.
No mention of that.
Not a mention of that. They also still behead gay people in Saudi Arabia.
My favorite characterization came from Thomas Friedman at the New York Times. Who,
oh, great. I love his take on this.
It was so good because it was kind of like, hey, liberals, what do you expect? He's not a Democrat, i.e. like a proponent of democracy. He's he's a modernizing autocrat. And it's like, modern autocracy. Why are we even questioning any of this? Because it's a modernizing autocrat.
Yeah.
That's all.
And the truth is, we will fully modernize Saudi Arabia with the movies.
Oh yeah,
with the positive American message of Avengers: Infinity War.
Yeah, if you
that
think
comes
about
out this
it,
summer.
What has been missing from Saudi society is really Marvel
yes.
extended universe.
Yes,
film.
The Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them franchise. Once they get that,
there's a lot
once
of lessons
they have
in
these
there.
Positive role models on screen. Like The Rock and Oprah, who came to a party to take selfies with him, with the Crown Prince, and of course Rupert Murdoch, Bob Iger, and also the mayor.
Yep,
the mayor of LA.
Garcetti sat down for a private meeting with Mohammed bin Salman.
Yes, which we don't know a ton of details about, but I assume that Garcetti really read him the riot act on some of the stuff that he's been up to, and just said, look, pal.
You need to knock it off. Yeah.
Knock it off.
He didn't do that, though.
He encouraged him to continue his efforts to advance women's rights in Saudi Arabia. But it also, the statement that he put out says that, but it also says that he raised his concerns about human rights. And that, I assume, is when he really yelled.
Oh yeah, that was when he really got into it. I'm sure.
Yeah,
there were harsh words exchanged. Garcetti's famous for
yes.
for that,
and also the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Yemen.
Yeah, and I don't know how much Garcetti really got into it with him, but they they do mention that he concluded by mentioning all of the opportunities that he felt there were for LA companies to do business with Saudi Arabia.
As an afterthought. On his way out, right. I think you turned around and it was like, oh, by the way.
Your blockade is causing cholera in Yemen. By the way, here yes. are a list of LA companies. Yeah, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine that that's actually how it went down.
We also want to talk about Ref Rodriguez.
This is my favorite one of the week.
Who, he's in the news. Ref Rodriguez is one of the, Dr. Ref Rodriguez, sorry, is one of the seven members of the LAUSD school board. He represents District 5, which is, all these districts are very stupidly drawn. But his is Northeast and Southeast LA. So it goes from like East Hollywood, Los Feliz, Silver Lake, Eagle Rock, Highland Park, a big like blob up there. And then it snakes down to Southeast LA to like Vernon, Cudahy, Huntington Park, Bell. I never pronounce Cudahy right. Cudahy?
Cudahy. Yeah.
Cudahy. He is part of the charter wing of the LAUSD school board.
Right.
Right now, there's a 4-3 advantage for pro-charter board members versus the more pro-teachers union.
Yeah, they got the edge after the last election.
They swung the advantage, yes. Was he in the news for his pending felony charges for money laundering in his school board campaign, where he funneled campaign money through family members and then reimbursed them illegally?
I never heard about this one time. No, he wasn't in the news for
that. He was not in the news for that. Was he in the news for when he used to run a charter school network, when he funneled about $300,000 to his own companies without disclosing the conflict of interest?
No, he wasn't in the news for that either.
He was not. Was he in the news for continually refusing to step down from the board despite having pending felony charges or even make a public statement about any of these things?
No.
No. What was he in the news for?
Well, he got a little bit too drunk at Yard House and had to be escorted from the premises by police.
By police in handcuffs.
In handcuffs. He says they are the police, this is, are not characterizing it as an arrest. They just wanted to protect him from himself.
The headlines, certainly, and the handcuffs he was placed in do imply that it was an arrest. But I guess, yeah, they wanted to protect his hands from slapping his own face, and, like to punish himself.
I actually love his response to this. It's one of my all-time favorite things for someone to say after they were just, you know, told that they were too drunk to be safe in public. He says he appreciates the police for acknowledging the non-event that this really was.
Right.
And that just is so perfect. I love that.
Which, when he was in a jail cell for 6 hours, 5.5, 6 hours, I think, I'm sure the cops on the other side were like, yeah, it's total not event.
I want to know what would push it into event territory in his eyes. Maybe a felony charge.
I will say, this has happened to me.
At this Yard House?
Not at this Yard House.
Okay.
I was in New York and on a Friday night, which Jesus likes to say, it's Friday night, avoid the bookings, beloved. I can say from experience that that is very good advice. Friday night is not a good time to get arrested in New York or probably any city. Also, a Dr. Ref was arrested on a Friday night.
Were you a danger to others or just to yourself?
I was actually arrested for theft of services because I had left my wallet in the bar that I was drunkenly coming out of. I had gotten in a cab
right. And
had no way to pay. Oh. And so the cab driver waved over a police officer. I had also thrown up out of the window of the cab. So I think that it probably had that. We did not have a great relationship at that point already.
No, he wasn't a fan.
She
was not
yes.
a fan.
Waved over a police officer. I was cuffed and stuffed into a cop car. Spent the night in a cell. Went to the Tombs under the courthouse for the next 24 hours.
The Tombs?
The Tombs is where they keep you in like a group cell before your hearing.
Uh-huh.
And I told my parents, this was when I was 22. I told my parents about this last year. And I would characterize that as an event.
An event, yeah.
In my life.
That's something that you look back on and say, that wasn't nothing.
For me personally, that was an event.
Right. And you learned not to do that on a Friday night. Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe. Friday, yes. No.
And I should say, we almost did our first journalism We went to, Scott and I went to the Pasadena ArcLight this past weekend. We went to see Blockers.
Yeah, we were under Deep Cover.
Yeah,
we went as movie patrons who then went to Yard House.
Yep, I really liked Blockers.
Me too.
It was really funny.
Yeah, I was actually surprised.
And so afterwards, just to dissect the movie, we went to the Pasadena Yard House, which happens to be the Yard House where Dr. Ref Rodriguez was arrested. And we asked a hostess and a bartender if they knew what happened. The hostess said, we just said, like, do you remember, like, a couple weeks ago when a guy got arrested for public intoxication here? The hostess was like, yeah, I mean, that happens all the time. So, yes, I do remember that happening many, many times.
Yeah, yeah, you said, were you working when somebody got arrested in here? And she said, yes.
Yes.
Be more specific. Yes.
But then we asked a bartender, and he was like, oh yeah, a lot of people were talking about that. He said that he saw it like really blow up on social media probably after it was announced,
right,
that he had been arrested, which was like 3 weeks later, because this was on March 16th that he got arrested, and it was just last week that it came out. And people might say, like, is this worth talking, you know, this is like something going on in his personal life, whatever. He, you know, he oversees 115, there's like 750 kids in LAUSD.
750,000.
Sorry, 750,000 kids in LAUSD. He is responsible for 100,000 plus of them. Probably as many school-age kids, I'm going to guess, are in like the state of Wyoming. A few states.
I mean, it's close. It's a lot of kids.
It's a lot, it's of, a kids. Lot of kids. And this, in combination with some of the other things that he's dealing with, I wonder when we reach the point where we decide that he has maybe a little too much going on
to also handle the effective management of the schools.
Of that many children.
Yeah.
Okay, we want to get to our big news. Our first guest, really, in the form of a series of unattributed statements from a spokesman at the Boring Company, which is Elon Musk's initiative, his company that is building these tunnels underneath LA.
And I think that listeners will really appreciate that we have unattributed statements as our first guest.
Yes.
That, to me, when you came to me and said, this person wants to speak on our podcast, I had no idea.
I hope that it's a series of unattributed statements.
Yeah, well, I mean, dare to hope.
What makes it more fun is it could be Elon himself.
It could be. We have no idea.
And I think that's why they do it unattributed. So they let our imaginations run wild. So this is just a little context for this. Elon Musk is upset about all the traffic in Los Angeles. He wants to dig some tunnels in order to alleviate traffic. He has already started digging a tunnel in Hawthorne, where SpaceX headquarters
right.
is. And so at first, initially, he's going to go basically from LAX along the 405 up north through like Culver City, West LA, through the mountains and into Sherman Oaks in the valley.
Yeah. And so basically this entire project is based around the fact that Elon Musk is very, I don't know what the word is, perturbed that LA has so much traffic and he believes that he can personally fix it. So
he's
going to set about doing that.
The tunnel is going to be for cars and for pedestrians. The way it works is the cars drive on the surface, on the street, a small spot, basically the size of a parking space. And then that parking space lowers under the ground. And then the car is carried on like a skate, like a tray, through the tunnel system. And it surfaces again at its destination. It goes really, really fast.
125 miles an hour.
125 miles an hour at top speed. Pedestrians also board on the surface. These little pods pop up on the surface. I think you order your destination from some kind of kiosk at the station on the surface. A pod pops up. And you get in the pod and you get there really direct to your destination. You do not stop along the way. Each pod goes directly to where you want to go.
Yeah, and this is kind of the aspect that a lot of transportation professionals have. Well, there are a lot of aspects that people have had issues with.
Yeah.
But this notion that...
Which you are, we should say, a transportation professional.
I am a person who writes about transportation.
And you have an advanced degree in this field.
Well, I mean, okay, so basically the concerns are that you are essentially saying you're going to replicate LA's existing road network. That's kind of the boring company plan, is to replicate this road network that we
underground.
Have underground,
yes,
which is expensive, takes up a lot of space, and you're going to use a series of lots and lots of elevators at stations, and also you're going to limit capacity by saying people have to go directly to their destination. It's kind of yes. like antithetical to how public transportation as we know it works.
Has worked traditionally and in the past.
And it's fair to say, like, this is the way that public transportation works, and it operates at like a massive government subsidy. It does yeah. not make anybody money. So Elon Musk is saying he's going to do this in a way that is less cost produced or less revenue generating. But he thinks that it will make him money somehow.
Yeah, that's right. We should say that he is paying for all of this himself. And he is going to run, the plan is for him to run it privately. Normally, he would get $1 billion or way more for a project like this from the city in order to set up the infrastructure. And then the city would lose money on it for the rest of its lifespan.
Right.
Like, for example, the Red Line recoups a very small percentage of its fares.
Yeah. The operating revenue for Metro's rail network and the bus network is something like 20%. The fares cover 20% of the operating costs.
What is it just for rail? Do you know?
I'm not sure. It's probably
it's
actually
higher or lower?
Slightly higher, just because, again, the rail has higher capacity.
Okay.
So you can actually carry more people while running fewer vehicles, and a lot of the operating right. cost is paying for drivers and things like that.
So do we want to generously say that that's 30% of the operating costs are covered by fares?
By fares, that sounds
so that
possible.
Means that 70% of operating costs
are covered by taxes
and just disappear, are never made back,
no, and are not expected to be,
right? And that doesn't include any maintenance.
No.
Any of the cost of buying the train cars or buses, or the cost of digging the tunnels,
nope.
which is incredibly expensive. Historically, digging these tunnels is about $1 billion a mile. Is that correct?
That is correct for now. Yeah.
Yes. And so a big part of the pitch for the Boring Company is that they can do it much, much cheaper.
They're saying they can do it 10% of, I think, what is prevailing cost in the United States. And there's been a lot of discussion about the fact that United States construction costs are actually significantly higher than they are elsewhere in the developed world.
Yeah.
Europe does it for, I would say, about half or maybe a little bit less than half of what we build underground tunnels for here
okay.
in LA. But Elon Musk is not going to those agencies and figuring out what are they doing that is reducing costs of construction. He's kind of trying to go about it his own way, and he's saying it's going to be significantly more productive than what is happening.
Yes.
In those
so
cases.
On the FAQ on the website, they say we can do it at 10% of the normal cost. We have more specific answers about that we got from this unnamed spokesman. So basically what we have talked about this before among just each other, and sort of wondered how they were going to do this. And there have not been a lot of answers out there so far.
There are
about
very
how
few details. Very few details so far. And we were kind of just wondering, how does any of this actually work in practice? Because when you're just saying it's going to cost X amount of money, it's going to generate a profit, the public's never going to have to pay for any of it, it all sounds great, but then you also have everybody else saying, well, how does any of this add up to a profit and all the rest?
And there have been other questions about, like, how will it alleviate traffic? If cars are using it, will it be able to take enough cars off the road and not induce demand for more cars to get on the road to alleviate traffic? So then it kind of in response to that, he tweeted a few weeks ago that he was going to prioritize pedestrians and cyclists over cars,
which I saw, and my only response, everybody was like, oh yeah, like, we have a billionaire that is prioritizing equity, that's fantastic, and I love transportation equity, that's amazing, that's great, let's prioritize pedestrians. But when I saw that, my reaction wasn't okay. It was kind of like, What does that mean? We're talking about going underground, sending cars and vehicles that have pedestrians and bicyclists in them. What does it mean to prioritize one over the other? That was kind of the stuff that we wanted to get into.
So we asked that.
We did.
This podcast practices radical transparency. I have a friend who works at the Boring Company. And so I went to him and I said, hey, we have these questions about the system that you guys are building in an email. And like later that day, we got these responses, not necessarily from him, but they could be from him. They're from an unnamed Boring Company spokesman. Personified for the purposes of this show in the form of a text-to-voice, a free text-to-voice software on the internet. So we'll add to, you know, simulate the fun of having a guest. We'll ask the questions and then we'll play the guest's answers, the spokesman's answers, and then we'll talk about them.
We'll talk about them. It's great.
So our first question was, roughly how much will pedestrians and cars be charged to ride? Will fares be based on distance? Because one thing that we had sort of wondered, I had sort of theorized for a while that it would cost more, like equivalent to an Uber or a Lyft to get across the city. It would be like $20 or something, because you get there at 125 miles an hour. It'd be really fast.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that when we had discussed it before, you were saying, well, if it costs an Uber, but it's faster than an Uber, wouldn't that be really good? And I said, but in order for it to actually be profitable, what if you had to end up charging 2 or 3 or 4 times as much as an Uber costs? And then what does that do to who's able to actually ride it?
Who's able to ride it? Exactly. And so we asked, how much is it going to cost? Will it be based on distance? And this was the response.
Fixed fare equal to or less than metro fares.
I love this response because metro is not doing so hot with metro fares, and they're losing
a lot of money, shitloads of money.
And so some of that is access to the system, but it's like, in order to actually make it so that everybody could easily, conveniently make it to a Boring Company station and would be paying, let's say, $1.50 is what they're essentially saying they're shooting for, then you'd have to have a station everywhere.
Yeah, it's like 175 now.
It's 175 right. to yeah. ride, but if they're saying they want it to be less than, I don't know.
Equal to or less than.
Right.
So they're basically saying that you can get from if they build it out to the thousands of stations that they want, or even getting from LAX to Sherman Oaks, that you could pay less than $2 and get there at 125 miles an hour. The promise is incredible.
Yeah, at this point, it's staggeringly high. I don't understand.
I mean, that would be amazing.
So then the other thing is that if you actually are able to build this system where you have stations everywhere, they're very easy to get to, and everybody is paying $1.75 to use them, then you have congestion. You have a massive issue with people overloading the system if you actually build it in such a way that you would be able to generate any kind of profit off of that.
Especially because each car only holds between 8 and 16 passengers, something like that.
Right.
You would have to, especially from the airport or something, you would have to, the number of pods you'd have to be able to board at one time would have to, in order to equal the capacity of a Red Line subway car, would have to be a lot.
Which is, a Red Line train carries over 1,000 passengers. So you would have to really be firing them off every couple seconds, which I don't know.
A lot. And I guess, the Red Line trains don't come as often as maybe these could. I mean, they come, unfortunately, like every 20 minutes.
Every 10 minutes, yeah.
It's often 20.
It's not great, but they could increase the frequency of that. They just haven't.
So we asked, we wanted to know what Elon meant when he tweeted a few weeks ago that pedestrians and cyclists will be prioritized over cars. I think he said that pedestrians and cyclists will go first.
They'll go first, I think, yeah.
And so we asked, how does that work in practice? Our guest, your response.
We will roll out people skates before car skates.
We will roll out people skates before car skates.
I don't get anything from that.
Well, okay. Well, I did ask for more clarification on that because I didn't understand if it meant the people skates will physically roll out before the car skates, or if they'll be developed and running first. And so I asked for clarification And they said that the people and cyclist skates will be developed and running before the car skates. You will be able to ride them first.
In which case, it's not really prioritization, because
then, it's a kind of prioritization,
but then
especially if the car skates never happen.
Okay, it's a kind of prioritization, but it's not the kind of prioritization that leads to equity. If you're saying people that like Elon did on Twitter, if you're saying people that can't afford cars deserve transportation options, it's not really the same if you're just saying we're going to build the pedestrian thing first and then we're going to flood it with private car traffic. That you're not really helping pedestrians in the long term.
Well, something we didn't get a full answer on this from our earlier question. We asked how much pedestrians and cars will be charged to ride. I'm guessing that when they said equal or less than metro fares, that only applied to pedestrians.
That's probably true.
I can't imagine that the cars would be charged a lot more.
You would have to charge based on distance, I would think.
Yes.
I can't imagine.
And
not
just
doing
significantly
that.
More. So our next question, we asked to what extent they'll be attempting to tunnel under private property, because this is something that has really snarled up a lot of public transit programs in the past. You have to get easements and like all kinds of permission anytime you're going under somebody's property.
It's hard for the government to do, and the government has the power to do it. A private company has almost no power to do it.
So. Right. Would that have to be a collaboration with the government where they could go in?
I actually don't know how that would even work in this day and age.
Should have asked that. Anyway, your response, guest.
As of now, the only subsurface land utilized for our current projects will be beneath public right-of-way and beneath private land, owned or controlled by the boring company.
Okay.
As of now.
As of now. So that limits somewhat the number of stations they can build in the short term. Basically, it means that they're going to just be going from SpaceX property up the 405 pretty much, because they're allowed to build under the 405 as much as they want.
Yeah,
that's public right of way.
So yeah, they're targeting streets basically, and they're not planning on going underneath property owned by anybody, single family houses or anything like that. That does somewhat alleviate their issues, as long as the government remains, the multiple governments that rather remain amenable to having them do that kind of work. But it also kind of raises an issue of, as we were saying, are you just replicating the LA street network? That's kind of expensive. You are eliminating the direct point-to-point tunneling and saying, I'm going to tunnel kind of circuitously by way of all of these roads.
Yeah. So one thing we wanted to know is how the tunnel system will interact with existing bus and rail lines. We were basically wondering if this is supposed to complement the current bus and rail system, or if it's supposed to replace them entirely. And the response that we got was...
Loop systems are designed to complement current public transportation options. We absolutely plan to build stations near existing bus and rail stops. For instance, we would like to connect the orange, green, expo, silver and blue lines along a north-south route.
So basically saying it's supposed to complement existing bus and rail infrastructure.
Yeah, and this one to me is probably the most interesting answer, because it kind of suggests that they are considering bidding for a project that LA is already working on, which is the Sepulveda Line tunnel that was part of the Measure M sales tax that we passed here back in 2016.
Yeah,
so
going from like Hawthorne up to Sherman Oaks, you could connect the orange, green, expo, silver,
so,
and blue lines.
In order to connect the silver and blue lines, though, you would actually have to go basically follow the path of the 405, you said, all the way down to Long Beach.
Yep.
So that's kind of what it sounds like. And that's something that is not even in the scope of those plans because the cost is so high.
Right.
But again, if you can do it for 10% of the cost, then maybe that's possible at that point.
So this was the big question that we asked, because the cost of tunneling basically dictates whether or not you can do this project at all. So we said the Boring Company FAQ page suggests that your technology can reduce tunneling costs by a factor of 10, which would come to about $100 million a mile. Is this an accurate figure? Because even if you went from Hawthorne to Sherman Oaks, that's 12 miles. If it were $100 million a mile, which is what they seem to be suggesting they can do it at, that's $1.2 billion, which would basically be impossible to recoup.
Yeah, and it's, you know, of course, significantly cheaper than what we're planning to spend on it. So,
way cheaper.
Yeah. Way cheaper. I think we have 9 billion allotted for that.
Yes. And so this is the response that we got. This seems like the biggest news to me.
100 million is crazy high conservative estimate. We will be way below that number.
So they're saying that the 10% figure in terms of cost of tunneling that right. they had sort of announced when they started the company is actually really high.
That was conservative. That
was a conservative estimate, and they will come in way below that.
Because nothing about Elon Musk ever strikes me as being like a conservative statement. It's all, you know, bombast, yeah. But that was conservative.
And they've said that the way they can do it much cheaper is the tunnels will not be as big a diameter as normal subway tunnels. They'll be using the tunnel boring machine they're developing digs a smaller tunnel.
Right.
That basically just fits your car or the pod. So it's like a bunch of little tunnels instead of these really huge ones.
Huge ones.
And so look, I mean, I guess the predictions do depend on the cost of if they can do it for like $1,000 a mile, then they can do basically any, you know, they could build it around the entire world.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like the questions and the answers to them have just kind of led me to even more questions. But
we have more information, but still not total clarity in terms of how they will accomplish this. But I do feel like I understand a little more about why they think it's possible. They really, really seem to believe that they can dig these tunnels incredibly cheaply. So cheaply that they can maybe come out ahead,
right?
In terms of operating them as a private business instead of the public service that they're that loses millions and millions and millions of dollars today.
Yeah, and it's just kind of that question of how are you going to do this?
Yeah,
which I guess we all just have to wait and see.
We should have asked that. That's episode 2. We did it.
We did it.
In the future, we will have real guests. We're going to talk very soon about the gang injunctions in Echo Park, about how those got lifted recently, the effect that it had on people's lives. We're going to talk about permanent supportive housing. We have a lot more great episodes coming up on the LA podcast.